everybody. Welcome to another episode of Courtside with Nealance and Tennis, part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Thrilled as always to have with me my co-host and Hall of Famer, Steve Flink. Steve, there's definitely no shortage of topics to discuss this week.
No, why don't you lead us in? You're right. There's a multitude of topics. I'm looking forward to talking about them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we'll talk in depth on Indian Wells. But before we get to Indian Wells, I think we need to address the Simona Halep situation, because that whole thing didn't sit well right with a lot of people, including you and I. It was terribly unfair. We all felt that she was innocent from the start. Yeah, if she did take something, it may have been recommended by somebody, not her. The thoughts I want to share, and Andy Roddick's latest pod talked about it, and I know you and I talked about it as well. It's always going to be hard to prove it, but the consequences should not always be limited to the player itself, especially if it was recommended by someone on the team. Now, again, I'm speaking in general. I don't know the facts of exactly what happened with this case. There were some articles out there that I believe you'll address. But there has to be a way that if it wasn't of the player's own doing, you know, the team should suffer some consequences. Again, very hard to prove.
Listen, Darren Cahill, let's start from the beginning. Darren Cahill, who of course had been Simona's coach, they'd had an on again, off again, largely successful relationship. And he said from the outset, he was adamant that she didn't do it. He was convinced, knowing her the way he did, that she was innocent. She proclaimed her innocence. Then finally, this whole long process is drawing out, and we find out that Patrick Mouratoglou, who Simona had been training with, he said in one of these pieces he thinks he's responsible. You know, he thinks it. He was trying, in essence, to take the blame, and it was unclear to me whether he knew that this was something they shouldn't have been giving you, that there was outlawed a substance that is not permitted on the tour. But the bottom line is he seemed to be taking responsibility. So that gets to your point that you just made concerning Roddick and others around. So my feeling is, David, that in those cases, they have to find, the integrity unit has to find a way to penalize the likes of Patrick. If they admit to any wrongdoing, or they have done such, trainers, coaches, if people in the inner circle of these players. But then ultimately too, the player is responsible. And as you know, what they ended up doing was reducing Simona's suspension from 4 years down to 9 months. That's substantial, but it's still a suspension. So in a way, I think it was the right compromise, a much, much lighter penalty that's retroactive. So she returns immediately in Miami.
Yeah, but she gets the wild card in Miami, which is tremendous, tremendous.
Yeah, but she has to... It's basically saying to the player, we believe, and they said that, we believe you that it was inadvertent. We don't think you deliberately did this. But they're saying you have to take some responsibility here. You know, the people around you better make sure you know who you're dealing with and that they know what they're doing. Because in the end, a player could still benefit, even if they didn't know it, you know, by taking something illegal. So I felt like in the end, it was the right solution, especially that it's also retroactive. She doesn't have to wait 9 months from now. And in the end, she's essentially cleared, but she's being told, being given a lighter sentence.
The whole thing smelled just from the very beginning. Again, glad she gets the wild card in Miami. We'll see how much game shape she's in. She said she hasn't been too far away from the court, but as we all know, you have to be in that competitive state. To me, again, from the beginning, the whole thing smelled. Darren came out immediately and said, I know Simona. This isn't Simona. The whole point with having a team, whoever, maybe one or two or three, whatever the case may be, the proof, that's the problem with that. Who's going to admit to that on the team?
Well, you're right. But in essence, it seemed like Mouratoglou was. You know, you read the piece. I read the piece. I don't know what he would say under further investigation, right, how much he'd admit to. But he seemed to be in these interviews saying, look, I didn't mean to cause any trouble here, but I may have. So you're right. It's hard to prove with them, too. But it seems unfair She gets her 9 months, and as it stands now, he'll get nothing when he may have been responsible. I say may have been because it's still a little unclear to me exactly when he you know, when this all occurred, but he certainly seemed to be taking responsibility.
And I think the whole process, the whatever the legal process that this was, it needs to get fixed because it was pretty messy right from the get-go. But hopefully,
yeah. But you know what? You're right. I couldn't agree more. It needs to be a lot faster. That
yes.
is all. This thing was dragging out, and it was looking so bleak that she would ever be able to play top flight tennis again, especially if she got the 4 years, and she had to go through all that emotional ordeal. So that's not fair either. When in the end, it's a much lighter sentence, and she certainly comes out of this looking a lot better and feeling largely as she should, vindicated.
Right. And professional athletes, their you know, lives are their professional sports athlete lives are so short as is. She can't get this time back, and other people who've been affected by this can't get the time back, which is obviously really unfortunate. But
well, look, I think when she gets to Miami, that she's going to get great. People always loved her because she was feisty. She was an indefatigable. She was the little big woman, if I could say that. That's not the right phrase, but basically she was diminutive compared to so many of the other players, but she made up for it with the size of her heart and her hustle and her counterattacking skills and just a tremendous competitor. So I think the fans will love seeing her again. And many of them will know what she has just endured over this last year and a half. They'll be well aware. So I think she's going to hear cheers more vociferously than maybe she ever heard them before in the United States.
Oh, well said. I agree. 100% should be the case, no doubt. All right, let's talk from some tennis now. We're in Indian Wells. We're just before Indian Wells in Vegas. They had the Netflix slam between Carlos Alcaraz, Rafa Nadal, two people who were coming off injuries. Carlos rolled his ankle weeks prior on the clay. Rafa, we all know it's been tough sledding for Rafa for a while now. He's trying so hard to get back. They play an entertaining match. Carlos wins 14-12 in the third set tiebreaker. There was some unbelievable shot making, as we would expect from both players at times. There was questions on the movement of both players, whether Carlos was favoring his ankle a little bit. Rafa just, again, coming back from a long injury. They both looked okay coming out of that match. Unfortunately, shortly thereafter, Rafa comes out with the announcement, withdrawing from Indian Wells. So now you know he's probably not going to play Miami. Then the clay court season happens, Steve, and you hope he's got Roland Garros left in him, but we need him to play one or two events leading up to Roland Garros.
Yeah, he can't afford another setback. I mean, look, he lost all of last year in essence after the Australian Open second round loss. The year was over. Comes back, looked pretty good in Brisbane, went a couple of matches looking really terrific, and then lost a tough match to Jordan Thompson, got hurt in that match. That's what forced him out of the Australian Open. Then he was going to play Doha. And that was encouraging that he would enter a tournament so soon after the Australian injury, had to pull out of Doha. And then it was also encouraging when he played the XO, and we all know the players are not going to strain themselves physically or mentally the same way in an XO that they would in a tournament. But as you say, there was some spectacular shot making, and it made people believe. It was encouraging. And he also said during a kind of a mid-match interview that he was playing better than he expected to. See, there were some signs that, okay, and now he's ready to go in Indian Wells. Let's see what he can do. So to have that setback, we're getting dangerously close from Rafa's standpoint to the French Open, meaning he desperately needs reps. He needs matches. And he needs us to be able to get through, say, Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Rome. Let's say normally he might play four of those. Let's say he could just play three. But get through them, no injuries, good showings, go deep into some of those draws, and look healthy. And then that would give him the shot at Roland Garros. But if there's if there's a recurring injury or a new one somewhere along the line in one of those events, then it might well force him out of Roland Garros. And then who knows if that's the end of his career. So this is a precarious stretch ahead for Rafa, but I think he knows it. I think he knows just what he's up against, and he's hoping that maybe historically, except for maybe 2 years ago, for the most part, he's been injury free on the clay. And I think he's hoping maybe that surface being kinder to his body than hard courts, that perhaps he can have some better luck.
Depending on how he does, assuming he's healthy on the clay, in my opinion, this is just my opinion only, I think three tournaments is a lot, especially if he does well in the tournaments that he plays. I'm thinking maybe two, because he just wants to be extra careful, especially if he wins a, you know, a few along the way and goes far. I think three, you're almost pushing it. He hasn't played three tournaments in over, well over a year, Steve.
No, it's true. But on the other hand, he wants to. I get your point. I see your point. On the other hand, he needs to put his body through some tough physical tests too. It's a fine balance because he needs those matches for the confidence. It depends. Now, let's just say he got to the quarters of Monte Carlo and then he won Barcelona. Maybe he pulls out of the next one and then plays one more before. I still think he can get three in if they're spread out. But regardless, he needs matches, and whether that means two tournaments or three tournaments, I don't know precisely. But he's got to get through them injury free. That's the key. Can't have another one.
No, he can't. All right. We've talked about some coaching changes the last two episodes, I believe. One that was recently announced. I love it. Love it. A lot of people I've talked to outside of you loved it. I know you're thinking it's positive as well. Maria Sakkari and David Witt. David Witt's really been with two players for a long time, and that was both Venus Williams and Jessica Pegula. He's done great work with both of them. Sakkari needed a change. We all needed that. We all knew that she needed a change, including her. Obviously, she was the one who did it. I love this connection. We don't know how it's going to play out, but if you're going to change coaches, David's certainly someone that you'd want to have in your corner.
No, it's a very wise move, and he's dealt with different personalities there, and Venus going through the aging process and still enduring, and Pegula, that was surprising in a way that it didn't last longer, but he did some excellent work with her, and I think she would be the first to back me up on that, and it ran its course fair enough. But everybody knows he's got the credentials, he knows what he's talking about, and he may be able to get her over that difficult hurdle where she's constantly losing so many of the tight matches. And we've talked about that over the last few years. And I think he'll be very good in that area as well, because he understands women's tennis at the upper levels of the game so well. And he's seen her play a lot in the process of working with his other players. He knows her game well already. Now it's just a matter of two of them getting to know each other on a personal level. Then I think so, there's some great work ahead for him. It should be a very good partnership.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how this partnership develops. Okay, Novak Djokovic, Steve, I can't believe it, but first time back in 5 years, he plays today. He plays former Illini, Alex Vukic, if that name sounds familiar. Alex was recently on the pod. I interviewed both him and his former Illini teammate, Alex Kovacevic. I was down in Delray. Vukic can play on hard courts. You remember his run to Atlanta last summer? He made it to the final. He lost to Taylor. Novak hasn't played in Indian Wells in a little while. Maybe a little rusty. Novak should win in straight sets, but interesting one. I'm looking forward to watch it just because of the Illinois connection for me in Vukic.
Yeah, I heard Vukic made some interesting comments about it sounds like he's kind of idolized Novak over the years and watched him more as a fan than a fellow player, admiringly. Now he said he had to go back on YouTube and look at some stuff and try to be more analytical about what it's going to take to go out there and make an impression in this match. So it'll be interesting. I do think it does help him that Novak has been idle since the semifinal loss to Sinner at the Australian Open. So it is about 6 weeks now, and I feel like that might help Vukic to sort of stay with him for a while in that first set, to hang with him for a while and maybe make the first set tight. But I agree, it's hard to imagine Djokovic not winning in straight. But I do expect the first set especially to be competitive.
Yeah, I know the Illinois fans are going to be watching that a little bit closer than maybe a normal first round match with Novak, obviously. All right. Sad news last night. Rybakina withdraws now, Steve. She was the defending champion. We all know the trio, right? That we talk about, Iga, Sabalenka, Rybakina. I mean, and Rybakina, I think, has Sabalenka, I would say, is probably the biggest hitter on the WTA tour, but the best serve, I think, is Rybakina. Sad to see her withdraw, and she probably hated having to announce that. She plays so well.
No, I totally agree with you. There's certainly no better first serve in the game, and arguably no better second serve. And she's had a very good start to the year. And you could tell how disappointed she was not to be able to defend. She got sick. It's a shame. Long year ahead, these things do happen, but it's a loss for the tournament. I mean, we'd already seen Nadal's departure. You don't want to see both Nadal and the defending women's champion out of the field, but that's just the way it is.
Some fun matches last night. Ben Shelton over Mensik. You talked about Mensik on the previous pod. I mean, he's 18. He doesn't look 18 years old. Just his size, the way he carries himself. Big, big hitter. Took the first set over Ben. Ben came back one sets two and three. I mean, when Ben wants to let loose on that serve, Steve, it's a cannon. It is a cannon.
It is. It's the mystery is just why he doesn't feel. I keep thinking back to the conversation he apparently had with John McEnroe during Laver Cup last year. And McEnroe was saying, why don't you go bigger more often? And he seemed to be saying then that his arm gets sore if he does that. And I hope they can address that because I'd like to see him be able to unload more often than he does. On the other hand, you and I were texting, and I remember during the first set, and then Ben made his move late in the second and got the break and won that set and played well right through the end of the match. His forehand improved. So it was an important win for him. I think he's really trying to sort of get his season going. And that's not a loss he wanted to take, despite the fact that this kid is just amazing. 6 feet 4, 18 years old. He's phenomenal.
Like I said, he doesn't look like 18. He doesn't carry himself like an 18-year-old. That was a fun match to watch. Another fun one, really, especially in the first set before Carlos ran away with it. But Carlos Alcaraz over Arnaldi last night. Carlos loses the first set 7-6. Again, we were texting last night, Steve. I mean, some of these points, just the short hops from baseline to baseline, hitting them on the rise. It looks some of those points to me look like it's almost like ping pong.
Yeah, no, it was electrifying to watch it. Little concerning for the Alcaraz fans in the first set, the sort of avalanche of errors, particularly off his forehand side. And he seemed to be beating himself, and he kept his cool. I didn't feel he was discouraged, but even in the tie break, he's down 5-2 and gets back to 5-all, a couple more errors. But then the last two sets were pretty routine, and he's. I'm still, as I said in the previous pod, I'm still not that worried about him. This kid deep down has so much inner belief. He's unshakable to me. And it's been a tough stretch, no doubt about it, especially since Cincinnati. But, he seems to be upbeat about trying to defend this title. I think he's going to play FAA next, which will be interesting. They've had a good history together, and FAA has given him some problems. But that win may really help Carlos. I hope it does because he's such a crowd player. You certainly want to see him in the latter stages of this tournament, win or lose. I hope he's around for semifinal weekend.
And I didn't notice while I'm watching last night, I didn't notice any restrictions in his movement, really. He seemed
No.
to be moving just fine. You agree?
No, very encouraging. No, he moved beautifully. That wasn't the issue. It was more just the timing on his ground strokes and shot selection, but that's fine. And it's interesting because Jim Courier talked a lot about the history of the Spaniards being the great percentage players.
I know.
Carlos, and obviously Carlos doesn't fit that mold, but that's what makes him so charismatic and so much fun to watch. And last night, that was the case once more.
Yeah, it was. Another match I want to mention, and I was talking to my good friend Katie LaFollette on this one. Ans Jabeur, she lost to a young American, Katie Valignets, last night, Steve. Ans, since that Wimbledon loss where she was heavily favored, I mean, there were emotional scars. There's been, some stories out now that she was dealing with some physical ailments as well. She has not been the same since that final, Steven. And we all love Ons, and we hope she gets right. Whatever it is, whether it's one thing, whether it's a few things bothering her, all the players love her, all the fans love her, everybody loves her. But it's pretty clear she just hasn't been right since that Wimbledon final.
No, and I listen, I'm sure there were deep emotional scars after losing. That was her second Wimbledon final on loss in a row. She's lost a US Open final. So it's been so tough for her not to make the breakthrough at the slams. But I think that the emotional scars could have stayed with her through the summer. I wouldn't have thought now. I gotta wonder whether it is lingering physical issues, because by now she should have been able, you would think, given her given her disposition and her experience and her capabilities, that she would have put it behind her. It is getting worrisome because she just has not been the same player at all. And this is too long a stretch. She's got to make a move pretty soon here.
It's hard to watch, Steve, because she has such a bubbly, fun personality, and you see her struggling on court. It's not the same Ange Jabeur that we're used to seeing.
No, and she's giving away a lot of psychological capital. I mean, the other players are aware of it too. So they go out there with a different attitude against her. Maybe before that, a lot of the lesser ranked players thought they didn't have much of a chance. Not so at this point. I hope that maybe in Miami she starts to turn around. But it's been quite an ordeal for Ange Jabeur, and certainly her fans are none too pleased about it.
Yeah, hope she gets well soon and starts playing Ange Jabeur type tennis. We all want to see that. Earlier I mentioned the trio of Iga, Sabalenka, Rybakina. I watched this person I'm about to mention earlier, a few days back, and this person's going to be right there with that trio sooner rather than later, and that's Naomi Osaka, Steve. I was impressed with how she looks, how she's talking in the media, how she's playing on court. She seems to be more comfortable than she has been in a long time. I think she's going to be up there. You know, something other opponents are going to have to deal with again sooner rather than later.
Well, when she started, she's just needed the matches. When she started back in Australia, though, you could see that the Naomi who was struggling emotionally a couple of years back, physically, emotionally, but was not enjoying herself, win or lose, you could tell she really, for the most part, was not enjoying being out on that tennis court. That was not the case even in these losses. And so I was encouraged by that. And I was also encouraged by what she did the other night. And yeah, to me, it's only a matter of time. She'll be up there very high. Can you imagine a top five with the three you mentioned? Let's not forget Coco, and throw Naomi in there. That would be some exhilarating top five for women's tennis. That may well be the case by sometime later this year.
Yes, it's just stress what you said about Naomi's demeanor. It looks so much better than when she was, struggling emotionally and just unhappy and just not wanting to be on the court. That was the first thing I noticed, even in Australia when she lost a tough match. Her body language looks so much better. So she'll be someone that her opponents are going to have to deal with soon, real soon. All right, let's talk about a couple fun matches today. We're time stamping this for the listeners. What is it, Saturday around 1:30 Eastern time? We already talked about Vukic versus Novak. How about this interesting one? There's some big hitters. Peyton Stearns versus Aryna Sabalenka. Stearns isn't quite as big a hitter as Sabalenka, but there's going to be some big hitting in that match.
Yeah, there'll be some shot-making fireworks. I agree. But I don't know how long she can stay with her Stearns toe-to-toe. You know, maybe we get a sort of a four-all score line turns into 4-1. I could see something like that happening. But there'll be some great tennis.
Tricky one for the viewers, and you may not look at it much in the matchup when you look at the two players, but this could be a tricky match. Tommy Paul versus Alex Mickelson. Mickelson's kind of a crafty player, and he can give Tommy some problems today.
Yeah, no, it could be quite a battle. I think Tommy overall likes the way he started the year, and he's come into some pretty good form. And I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if that match went three sets, by the way, but I still like Tommy Paul's chances to win it.
Another entertaining match on the women's side. Hinsdale, Illinois' own Caroline Dulhide versus Vika Azarenka. Going to be some big hitting between both of them. That one, I think I'll either say Vika easily, like a 3-1. But if it's not that, if it's not one way for Vika, I think that match is going to be extremely tight.
Yeah. Vika overall has been playing well this year. I agree. You can't. It's hard to gauge going in. The crowd also. The crowd could get pretty excited. They sense the upset. I don't know. I guess I'm going to stand in between you and go with Vika along the lines of 7-5, 7-6.
That's close. Yeah, that's a good match. I think a lot of fans would take that. These are fun. I know these are fun events when they're drawn, more than over just the typical 7 days. I know you have opinions on it that sometimes when you do these longer events, it takes a little while to get in the flow of the tournament. I think the players like it, just a lot of times they get like a day in between rest, at least for a few of the rounds, more typical of what they would get in a slam. These are fun, and it's just getting started. And when we do our next pod, we'll probably do the next pod when the tournament's over, but we'll have a ton of matches to talk about.
David, just a quick point on that. You're right, and I think for the players, no doubt. And I, if I were a player, I would like it too. My problem is, as a fan, as a reporter, someone who observed the game for so long, is that I always equate it with the golf majors. The golf fans are lucky. They sit down on a Thursday afternoon. It's the first day of the tournament. Sunday afternoon, they're watching the home stretch. It's all compressed into four often exhilarating days. And we have to wait, we've got to, it takes a while to get into the heart of these. So for the fans, this isn't so easy to follow over, say, a 12-day period, whatever it may be. But we're now getting into the nitty-gritty. Now we're heading toward the second week, and that's where things are going to pick up dramatically, and I'm looking forward to that.
And my one counterpoint to that, Steve, is, in the 70s and 80s, the depth was not nearly what it is today. Where if you did this in the 70s and 80s, the early round matches, are often just one-sided. With the depth on both the men's and the women's side, you get some really, really good early round matchups. So
Oh, I agree with that. I don't disagree with that. I think that you can get some, but I'm just saying, in terms of getting the outcome settled and getting
yeah.
down to those dramatic quarters, semis, and finals, it just takes longer to get there. And that's my only gripe with it. But no doubt, the depth for sure, both men's and women's, and we don't have any shortage of competitive matches in the early rounds.
Well, let me ask you, Steve, is this going to be Novak and then one of the three we've mentioned, whether it be Iga, Sabalenka? Well, it's not going to be Rybakina, so you got two right there. Iga, Sabalenka, and Novak.
To win the title,
Yeah.
I don't have a strong feeling. I'm not sure whether Novak, after the layoff, he's got a decent enough draw that maybe by the quarters he could feel like he's finding his best form, and I would like his chances, but I don't know whether Sinner's going to cool off yet either. Maybe Carlos comes out of this slump, and I don't like Medvedev's chances, because even though he got to the final last year, he hates these courts. Maybe he'll be able to get past that in his mind, and that was doing so well last year helped.
He said he's not going to blame the courts this year, though. So let's get that on record. He
Well,
did
that's
say
good.
that.
But I still think deep inside, he just doesn't feel it suits his game that well. And he, as last year, he was complaining, griping in the early rounds, "These are not hard courts."
Right.
That's what he actually said. So I don't know. I think it
He's
will
a
come.
hard court specialist. These are not hard courts.
So I guess what I would hope, because it's the emerging rivalry that seems to have taken over temporarily for Djokovic Alcaraz, would be a Djokovic Sinner final, with Djokovic having all the incentive in the world to avenge what happened in Australia, not to mention losing to him a couple of times late last year too. So he's lost three of the last four. That to me is the most likely final, but I want to see Novak's form. It may take him. He might be playing better by Miami than he is here. I'm not certain yet, but that's the final I'm hoping for.
Well, let's see. I'm getting amped up just talking about this. It's only Saturday. There's still a lot of matches and a lot of days left for the final. Maybe we'll do a quick one, Wednesday night or Thursday night if we're both we'll see how the draws go, and that'll be fun to maybe if we can talk about the latter rounds of the tournament. So,
Sure.
well, maybe I'll bug you midweek if that's okay, Steve.
No, that would be great. By then, there's going to be a lot happening. It'll be very, and when we'll have a better sense of where we're going by then.
I agree. Well, thanks, Steve, for your time, and let's enjoy these next 8 days, because it's going to be some good times.
Yeah, thank you, David.